1340 WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show. Your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Hi, and welcome to the program. Ed Marlowe, who was unavailable last week, still watching Disney Plus, couldn't do a show last week because of that. But also, I was in Florida last week, and we couldn't do one anyway. But finally, we pried away Ed's. I think the batteries ran out on his remote is what happened. So he's able to come in Friday of this week and do a show. Ed, good to see you. I forgot what you look like. You've actually grown a full beard. You were clean shaven last time I've seen you. And now it's you do know that it's not No Shave November anymore. We're in December now.
See, well, here's the thing about that, Neil. Two things. One, I'm actually doing this show despite not having watched the fifth episode of The Mandalorian.
Oh, no.
Which dropped this morning, so I can't talk about it just yet. Have seen the first four episodes. Two, No Shave November has now turned into Don't Do It December.
Is that it?
my wife is a big fan of a bushy beard.
Is that right?
And you know the rule: happy wife, happy life.
I've heard that. really taken any
consideration of it. Yeah, me neither. Sure. But the one thing that I will say, I personally don't mind a thick beard. As long as I can manicure certain parts, like I don't want a neck beard. I'm not a neck beard. I'm not going to let that go. I don't let Cheetos rest on my chest and not shower all day.
I got you.
Unless, you know, it's a Saturday and I don't have anything to do. Yeah. And I'm just sitting there playing video games all day. But I digress. I embraced a full beard partly because of No Shave November. I was like, let's just see how thick this can get. And my wife, like I said, she just always kind of likes the winter lumberjack look. Now I just kind of look like a silly goof, but she likes it. She thinks it's soft. Whatever. I'm rolling with it. When springtime hits, we will trim it immediately because I'm not going to walk around a giant sweat machine. But until then, with the cold winter months, why not?
Well, I just figure you're, you know, watching episodic TV week to week like the Amish do. So why not look like an Amish person?
Why not look like the Amish, yeah.
You need a little help churning a little butter tonight.
Yeah.
Need a barn built. I'm there for you. I'll help if I can.
I can churn the butter. I don't know if I can build a barn. I can help.
But we're not doing – we haven't watched The Mandalorian and not going to until the episodes have stacked up beyond where we could jam it in a two-day period.
Well, you've got five right now.
Is it eight?
I actually don't know. I haven't read as far. I've tried not to spoil myself too much, so I don't really know if it's going to go through The Rise of Skywalker or if they're going to go like past it. I think it's 10 episodes, but man, don't quote me on that. All I know is I wake up, there's an episode of The Mandalorian waiting for me. It's like Christmas every Friday.
Is there a baby Yoda in this? Is that what I've heard?
Yes. I don't mind. We're already to this point.
It's all over the internet.
You're seeing the memes, right? Yes. Without spoiling too much about what's involved or why the kid is the kid, he is a 50-year-old child.
Gotcha.
And that's we don't know Yoda's race, so people naturally call this baby Yoda, even though it's chronologically not correct. Yoda has already died. The Mandalorian, or joined the Force, so to speak. Mandalorian takes place 4 years after Return of the Jedi in the great fall of the Empire near the Outer Rim of the universe and the Star Wars galaxy. So what's taking place right now is there is another one of these creatures that's been discovered.
Okay.
We don't really have an origin story. We don't really know where the child has come from, but it's really good. So that's where we're at. Without spoiling too much more, because I know you and your wife are going to watch it at some point. It does involve a baby Yoda, and he has become kind of a crux of the show.
All right. So we're doing Jack Ryan right now. We're halfway
through. Heard that's a great show.
It's really good.
Yeah, I've got to get my wife
into
that.
Last year was good, and this year's so far is really good. I finished up Goliath, the worst season so far, although the last three episodes it picked it up and ran pretty well. So I give it a solid 7, I guess, overall, but it did start extremely slow. And then, of course, tonight, it's Friday night. That means Blacklist night. May not be able to watch it tonight, though, Ed. I have the granddaughter spending the night tonight as her and Dee Dee, dual Christmas presents here. They're going to the Ariana Grande concert.
Oh, wow.
In Memphis Saturday. So Christmas present for my granddaughter, she gets to go. Christmas present for me, I don't have to go. So it's like, whoa, it's really a good day.
You don't want to go to an Ariana Grande concert?
I do
concert?
Not. I want her to go. I don't want me to go.
Oh, okay. All right. That's fair. Yeah. I will say I actually like a little bit of Ariana Grande.
I like one song.
She can sing, man. God, she can sing. I mean, she's right up there with, like, if you're not into that kind of music, I get it. You know, if you're not into, like, kind of the pop.
Yeah.
You know, like, you may not be a Lady Gaga fan.
I love Lady Gaga.
But, man, she can sing, right?
Jeez, she
can sing. And that's what I like about Ariana Grande is that she is very attractive. There's no getting around that. She, in my opinion, she's one of the prettier pop stars. But if you're going to look at, like, talent-wise, man, she can sing. Golly, she's got the pipes on her to sing. And that's what I've always liked about Lady Gaga. Even if you're not into that music, you can at least recognize, holy crap, you've got some talent. So sometimes you don't see that in the pop world. That's not the case with Ariana Grande.
All right, let's talk some basketball and football as well. We're going to start with Racer basketball. Last week I was in Estero, Florida to watch the Racers. They went 1-2 at the Gulf Coast Showcase. Struggled to defend the three in game one mightily against a LaSalle team that ended up winning that. They looked pretty good, really. In game two, the Racers did better defending the three. Still 19 turnovers. They were fortunate to win the game, but did enough good things to win that. And then against Drake, awful offensively. 17 second half points. It was amazingly terrible offensively. Even though they did improve their 3-point defense, when you can't score, very difficult to win. So, still some high spots. You saw KJ Williams get his career high. Some other good things as well. I thought Chico Carter Jr. looked good. Turned out he broke his finger, so he's going to be out with a broken hand for 4 to 6 weeks. But some positives out of that. They couldn't turn that into a win against Missouri State, but at least they played a good second half offensively. I figured out, Ed, the second half against Drake, first half against Missouri State, 39 combined points.
Yeah.
Can't win college basketball games against hardly anyone like that.
No, and I think a lot of it just comes down to the fact that teams are doing a really, really good job creating what I would consider isolation situations for the Racers. They're neutralizing any point guard play. They've done a really good job walling up in the post, which is really kind of where you saw the Racers thrive against Tennessee. I think a lot of people are asking, like, where's that first half offense that you saw against Tennessee?
Right.
Well, Tennessee also made some changes, too. Mm-hmm. Now everybody's seen that tape. And McMahon's been preaching that since day one. Like, there's enough tape out there now, guys. Like, teams know how to take away what you're good at. After eight games, you know, there's scouting available now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you were trying to do during the summer, now all of a sudden people can start to figure out, oh, well, this is what they're really good at. We're going to take that away. I think for me, you take a look at that last second half against Drake and couple it up with that first half against Missouri State. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I think there's some key concerns. Defensively, the three-point defense is improving, but still, that second half at Missouri State, they went 4-for-6. None bigger than Keon. And granted, this is a senior versus a freshman, and it was actually pretty well defended.
It was. Great shot.
Yeah, great shot by Keon.
I'm not going to complain that one didn't get defended.
Yeah, the two before it, though. They go 4-for-6 in the second half. Two of them, I mean, just wide open. I mean, literally, either you missed your guy, or you missed your closeout, or you missed your box, whatever it was. I think one came off of an offensive rebound that ended up getting reversed and all that sort of stuff. The Racers are seeing a lot of ball reversal against them, too. And that's part of it. When your bigs aren't attacking the three-point line, ball reversal is the number one thing you can do because you're guaranteeing an open shot, either at the elbow or the corner. And I'd love to see the numbers. I don't have the analytics, but I would say the corners are being burned the most for the Racers. It's not the elbow. It's not even the top of the key. Yeah, you've had some big shots hit against you in those spots. The corners, man. The corner three has been an absolute detriment for the Racer defense. And I'm not sure to what to credit that. I don't know if that's a big not collapsing out to the line, you know, not coming out to the line fast enough. I'm not sure if that's a guard that's supposed to be switching a little bit faster to get to that corner. Sometimes it's transition. The one thing that has allowed the Racers to give up a lot at the three-point line is when you're missing baskets, you're allowing the other team to create transition offense. And some of these threes aren't coming in what I would consider complete wide-open transition, but they're coming at the corners where you're beating the Racers down the court. And that's just not something we've really seen a lot of out of the Racers over the last 2 years.
I believe next week's stretch, it's finals week, but there will be a ton of teaching and coaching. Then the next week, you got Kennesaw State Monday, Evansville on Saturday. Those 2 weeks, I think, will be amazingly profitable for Murray State because Matt McMahon and his staff, they do a great job seeing where the deficiencies are, working on those. You'll see a lot of improvement over the next couple of weeks. Will you see it Saturday night against Middle Tennessee? Not sure, but something I think you will see is more minutes from DeMond Robinson. Now, people may be asking after seeing the last game, man, why isn't DeMond playing anymore? Well, the first part of that you saw early on. He had three fouls in about 10 seconds, it seemed like.
Yep.
He can't defend without fouling yet, which is a common trait of 99% of the freshmen in college basketball.
And junior college transfers.
That's part of learning how to play basketball. He can't do that yet. But, man, he can do some other things. He can create some offense. He can block shots, has the big wingspan. You're going to see his minutes really increase, in my opinion, and they'll just live with the occasional foul from time to time. That's something that can be taught. He'll learn how to do that, how to not reach and things of that sort. So you like that. And, again, you get him in that rotation with K.J. Williams. It's obvious after the last game that you don't have Darnell Court. He's not really healthy. Seemed to really struggle moving. You could tell it's real sore with his knee. So I don't know if more rest is something that he needs or not. I don't know what the answer is there, but he's not quite even, I don't know, 60% of where he was at the end of last season.
He does not
opinion.
Look 100%.
Yeah,
I think it's very clear, and I think maybe even, I want to ask you on the side of caution here, but I would say there may have been even a slight re-aggravation.
Yeah.
And I can't rule that. I'm not a medical expert by any stretch of the imagination. But banging his knee with the brace on at the Gulf Coast Showcase wasn't exactly a great thing to happen to him. I don't think it necessarily did anything in particular from a medical standpoint.
It's real sore.
It's sore. Yeah. And you can't play with a sore knee. I mean, you just can't play, just like you can't play with a sore back, can't play with a sore knee, really can't play with a sore anything except maybe like a hand. And even then, that's not ideal either. So
Chico Carter Jr. broke his hand. He had, I can't say taken the job, but he had emerged as the guy who was starting, even though you still got minutes from Daquan Smith. Well, his hand's broken, and Daquan's like, he's pretty much forced into the role now. You're going to have to get the minutes and do better. And he seems to have really accepted that. I liked what he did in the second half, made shots. I thought made really smart plays, made a good drive, gets it to the elbow for that DeMond Robinson jumper. You know, he's going to be a freshman. He'll still make a mistake here and there. But all in all, this is going to be a good stretch for him. He's going to be forced to play the minutes, forced to not make the mistakes. And I still know, based on every assistant that we have, the dude's an elite shooter. Hasn't shown it yet.
Elite.
But he's making some shots more recently. When he starts making them, you get him, you get Brown, you get Eves, who can make them in bunches as well. And suddenly with that inside game, I don't think there's anybody giving up on the team, but it's easy to lose patience after last year. You know, we're driving the Cadillac around town and everything.
Yeah.
And and this year we're in the really nice SUV that gets good gas mileage. I still think there's going to be a really good team with a chance to win an OVC championship. So hang in there with them.
Well, and I think the other thing for me too is that, you know, you take a look at this team, is just so many moving parts and so many young pieces. It's brand new off the lot. You know, and a lot of these guys, and to be fair, Matt has completely, it's not like he's come in and said, all right, guys, we're winning the OVC championship. Not that he ever would.
No.
But he has specifically said repeatedly, time and again, almost repeated himself with some of his, he's got axioms.
Mm-hmm.
The axiom this year, we got eight guys coming back from last year that have either never seen the court with other guys or they're returning from a serious injury and they've not been on the court playing. Darnell Court was one of them. These are all. Anthony Smith was the other. And Anthony Smith played his motor right out of his rear end against Missouri State. 12 points, 10 rebounds, 5 fouls, trying to do everything.
Yeah.
That last foul was killer, you know, when he tried to get the double and get the steal. Hurts, you know, and you could see it on his face. He wanted to be out there for the final 4 minutes. But, you know, these are guys that, despite the talent, despite the skill level, they've not played a ton together. They're now, some of them are taking on bigger roles that they didn't necessarily, they expected them, but now they're here and it's tough. I'm looking at KJ Williams in that regard. They're asking him to score a lot more. He's not hit his three very well over the last couple of games, and since that 23-point game, teams have tried to take him away, and I think it's frustrated him. You know, I mean, they've kind of flummoxed him a little bit defensively, and then he's getting beat back on. He misses a three. He's not exactly hustling back to play some defense, you know, and that I think that cost him some minutes against Missouri State. Again, I'm not part of the coaching staff. I don't know, but it just kind of looked like to me, man, when he missed a couple of threes early against Missouri State, he's like, man, I'm offensively checking out. I'm out of here. And that's not going to work. You know, you got to find other ways to contribute. It's like the high school girls basketball game I saw last night between Marshall County and Russellville. Jada Driver, the new Lady Marshall that was injured most of last season, she went 2 for 12 last night. Couldn't find the ocean if she had a compass and the stars to guide her. But man, she put in 10 rebounds by halftime, and she had 14 total. You got to be able to do that if you're not making your baskets. I mean, KJ had 3 rebounds in 12 minutes the other night against Missouri State. Not ideal when your shot's not falling. So I expect the Racers to make a few, as you've said, changes moving forward. And you know what? You've got the depth to do it. Maybe not at the guard position in certain spots, but at the forward position, you can tool in a lot of different ways and see what you've got down low as the season progresses.
Middle Tennessee, they come in tomorrow night, Saturday night, for a projected 7 o'clock game, part of a men's women's twin bill. They're 4-5. They beat whoever Cumberland International is, or Columbia International, I think that's who it was, to break a 5-game losing streak. This isn't the team they hoped it would be. They don't have Scurry. They don't have Dishman. Scurry will be back after they play 11 games. So he'll be back in game 12, not available yet. But they do have 3 double-digit scorers that start. Another that comes off the bench, Antonio Green, tremendous guard, 17 points a game, really can shoot the three. So can C.J. Jones. And then they get Jace Johnson as well, and they bring Javonte Milner off the bench, averaging 10 points per game. This is a team, if they get those guys back, they'll be better, but certainly not where Nick McDevitt hoped they would be in year two.
No, and the other thing I was going to ask, too, is Dishman the transfer from EKU?
Yes.
Yeah. Is he eligible after Christmas, or do they even know?
I think his is injury-related. Mm. That's what their notes said.
That's really unfortunate for him because, you know, I mean, you kind of got used to seeing him at EKU, and you weren't sure what he was going to be, you know, and then was he a recruit that came in before A.W. Hamilton, or whatever happened, he leaves EKU, now eligible at Middle Tennessee. That's unfortunate for them. But I very vividly remember Antonio Green from last year. Holy moly, that kid can score.
Yeah.
You know, and despite what that game ended up being, Antonio Green, really, honestly, Shaq Buchanan did a great job against him, but Antonio still made some great baskets to kind of keep Middle in that game until late in the second half. That's also the game that Middle threw that junk defense at Ja and limited him to, what, 9.7 assists? And everybody was like, oh, Ja, you're going to be able to stop Ja. Yeah, no, that didn't work. They still won the game. He still had 7 assists, and most of them were alley-oop lobs to either Shaq or KJ. So, but that was last year. So, you know, Antonio Green, super talented. Middle, you know, I mean, you haven't lost back-to-back Division I games in 1,000 days almost. And you've just experienced that now in a tough layover from what you would consider a good Drake team and what you would consider the preseason favorite for the Missouri Valley in Missouri State. You struggled against Drake. Offensively, you struggled some against Missouri State, nearly stole that one. I thought the Tevin Brown slip screen where he pump faked and dished to Damon Robinson for the slam, I thought that was going to be the winner.
Me too.
I thought for sure. I was like, what a winning play. That stays. I think that's still a winning play, you know, but you got to credit Missouri State for being able to close down the stretch and a senior getting it done. That's what seniors do. And, you know, that's the one thing you want to try to avoid is a 3-game losing streak. I definitely, again, I'll harp back on it. I expect to see some considerable changes when the Racers face Middle Tennessee tomorrow night at the CFSB Center.
Talked to Rochelle over the weekend. Rochelle Turner did not have the guts to admit to her that when I found out what all they were losing, get out of bio, going to UConn, and so on and so forth, like, this might be a team that really struggles to win maybe four or five games. I don't know. Well, here we are. They've won four straight games. They've won five already. They have an Indiana State team coming in for Saturday night that's lost four in a row. This team is really gelling. They're having fun together. And the Murray High trio looks like the Murray High trio right now.
Yeah.
Coming up with some big plays down the stretch to win against Evansville. They're getting comfort behind wins. They're holding off teams' rallies late to also pick up a win. I like what I'm seeing out of them. It's a fun team to watch right now.
Yeah, not only is it a fun team to watch, the one thing that I'm going to say, rebounding is still going to be a critical part of their game and how they're actually going to come away with them. I know size is going to continue to be an issue. One thing that's not going to be an issue this season, even if they lose some games that they wish they hadn't, is defense. They are going to play defense. Just take a look at that final play. They did such a great job against, this is against Evansville, mm-hmm. such a great job. They let her drive just a little bit, then pursue on the back end. She commits a turnover trying to pass to the corner. Alexis Burpo, which, by the way, had 10 rebounds in that game.
Yeah.
Nearly came away with a double-double. Also, I believe, had four assists and a couple of blocks. Comes away with a steal. And then Macy Turley, who, by the way, had battled a little bit of a leg injury, I think, earlier in the game.
Yeah, she's out about a quarter.
Yeah, she was out almost a whole quarter. Comes back in, immediately hits a three to grab the lead, then hits the game-winning layup to finish it out. I don't think toughness or defensive acumen is going to be an issue for this team this year. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I think they're going to probably play until their knees just no longer have any elasticity left. Where they're going to have to really squeeze the blood out of the turnip is every rebound is precious, and honestly, I think every basket is precious, but that's, you know, that's part of it. You know, when you lose like three of your top four scorers, you got to find other ways to get baskets. That's going to be Macy Turley, Lacey Hawthorne, Macy Gibson. You know, I mean, Lex Mays even had 10 points the other night. You know, if you can get double digits in a lot of these different areas, it's kind of reminds me of just a lunch pail effort. You know, this team, if it gives you a lunch pail effort, every time it goes out, they've got a chance to win. And against Indiana State, they can make it five in a row.
18 points for Macy Turley, 6 steals, 6 assists, 6 rebounds. It's John Morant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of stats that he would have. I mean, it's unbelievable. And if you knew nothing about her and walked out on the floor, you wouldn't point to her as the one that would be doing that, would you?
No, because she's barely 5'5".
Yeah.
But, I mean, who cares?
I know. I noticed Winder has her on his Running with the Rachels podcast this week.
He does.
Suddenly she's podcast material.
Suddenly she can talk she can talk all the time now.
No kidding.
No, I very humble kid. Very
she is.
Very humble team.
Yeah.
As long as they can keep winning in this way, they're going to be able to do some very special things. Now the one thing I will say, I do think the top of the conference is tough. There's no doubt that UT Martin is going to be pretty spectacular this year. No question Belmont's going to be pretty spectacular.
But there's no team like Belmont was last year.
They really...
Which was kind of above everybody
just
else.
Just dominant, right.
Yeah.
The conference is going to be really unique this year, I think, for women's basketball. Tennessee State will be better than they were last year, I think. But Tennessee Tech.
They played Vandy to a 14-point game last night, I think.
Yeah. Tennessee Tech is actually going to be kind of in that mix of, just like last year, like that top three. You know, I know Rochelle would love to see this team specifically finish better than an 8 seed. But if you make it into the tournament, it's another, in my opinion, another successful season in which you thought.
I think so, too.
Yeah, in which you thought, man, what are we going to do when we lose 35 points to transfer?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's what a lot of people thought. And naturally, that is the natural order of basketball. You were losing some senior leadership. You were losing some rebounding. You were losing some defensive capability in Janika Griffith-Wallace. She did a really good job creating a lot of havoc last year. Doesn't matter. Got new players this year, and so far, they're rising to the occasion.
And the three Murray girls is like, we don't play on losing teams. Sorry.
They're playing fantastic basketball.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean,
they're
doing great.
They really are, and you would think, with a winning streak like this, you would think that some attendance would start to uptick just a little bit.
And it's been better for them,
yeah,
actually. It really
it
has.
But
they haven't been at home hardly at all.
That's also the other thing, too. I think we'll start to notice a little bit of an uptick in attendance with some of these doubleheaders,
yeah,
perhaps starting on Saturday night.
Sure. because there's hardly nothing else going on. Well, except for the Christmas parade.
And Marshall County Hoop Fest.
And Hoop Fest. And then Callaway plays Murphy.
It's a very busy Saturday.
But other than that, there's nothing going on.
And there's state championship football.
That's right, and that. But other than those things, there's – and hardly no one, I'm sure, will have Christmas parties.
No, no Christmas parties.
Probably none of those going on.
Never the first
week
of December.
But other than all of that stuff, there's nothing going on. So it should be a good – however, here's what I expect. Students need to be there. They don't have anything going on until next week. They have
finals.
That's
actually true for finals.
So the students, I expect to be there and have maybe our biggest student crowd we've had in a good while. Let's hope so. Let's talk some Racer football. Since we've last spoken, Kevin Saul, Murray State Director of Athletics, announced that Mitch Stewart, football coach, has been reassigned. I thought a lot of Mitch. He was tremendous to work with. So is his staff. These things are always difficult for me to talk about and address, but I understand, you know, it's all about, not all about, but it is significantly about winning. And there are other things as well. And Kevin Saul decided the need for a change was there. Mitch reassigned, and now the search is on for Murray State's new head football coach.
Yeah, I think the first thing that I do want to address is that I think I drew the ire of some fans, maybe anonymously.
You?
Yeah, well, it happens. It's part of the job. But I think it kind of called me out for being what I would consider, what I posted on social media as surprised that Mitch was fired, and that I also apparently drew the ire of some fans because I tweeted out specifically that I don't answer and cater to fans, which I technically don't. I really don't. They don't pay my paycheck. They don't. I mean, I've had some arguments with some people that say, you know, subscriptions and we read you and we're fans and what else are you writing for if not for fans? Well, I get that, but I guess I just don't answer specifically to what fans think or believe. I just write what the news is. And the news to me was stunning for two reasons. One, I had it on fairly good authority from a reporter standpoint that Mitch had a good chance to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there was that. So that's wrong. I was wrong there. That happens. It's not the first time I've been wrong. It's certainly not going to be the last time. I am 34 years old. Hopefully I've got a great 35 or more years in this career to be wrong. Fully expect to be numerous times, probably by the end of this podcast. That being said, I was more stunned that Kevin decided to pull the plug not because of merit, but because of money.
That surprised me. It was the money thing.
I'm not attacking Mitch or his tenure at all. I think there were some really good things that came out of his tenure. I know that people are going to point to 19 wins and 37 losses. I get that. I also get that you're going to point to not very many OVC wins. What I am going to point to from a success standpoint for Mitch, and I thought about writing about it, but I figured it would probably get a lot of blowback, and I just moved on as the search continues. I thought personally Mitch's tenure was successful for two reasons. One, the program is not a dumpster fire right now. It really isn't.
No.
It's not anywhere near what Austin Peay was for 5, 6, 7 years. And I'm not even necessarily going to blame Kirby Cannon there. I mean, look at what their budget was. They have increased their budgetary spending by more than 100% since 2012. Okay, Kirby had to deal with all of that. Like, nobody spent any money? Cool, we're going to go 0-10. So Mitch doesn't leave behind a dumpster fire program. There are some all-OVC candidate-type players on this team right now. The recruitment has improved over the last 4 or 5 years. Some of that by negotiations through the athletic department, changing the scholarships from a regional to an out-of-state type of situation. So that's improved. You've brought in some key transfers, maybe not game changers. You've had the highest draft pick in Murray State history in Quincy Williams. You've got Drew Anderson back on the practice. They pulled him in, you know, and were able to have a great year out of him last year. I just feel like there are certain things, you know, a lot of community development. You don't really have a long list of guys that got in trouble while the team was under his tenure. Yes, you had Rico McGraw. Yes, you had Corey Newble. Yes, you had Roman Clay, three guys that got in some, and even Zeke Pike early before he was dismissed. You had three, four or five guys that got into some considerable trouble, made some boneheaded decisions, immediately removed from the team. So I feel like those things were all positive. The negatives, you weren't winning. But the other negative, I think, didn't even necessarily have anything to do with him, and it's something you and I have talked about a lot. Mitch Stewart never really got to keep coordinators at for a lengthy amount of time. This staff alone had been with him. Some of the guys had been with him two or three years, but this was like the first time there was not any turnover, which I thought was a good thing. You and I talked about that before the season even started. It's like, well, Preston gets a nest. Preston Rice gets a nest of guys that he's been around, you know, defensively, offensively, all the coordinators and all the key positions. Everybody stuck around from last season's 5-6 finish. So, you know, again, I don't know. I know that there are a lot of old alumni who are seeking change. I know that Kevin has listened to that old alumni, and some new, to go out and change this program for the better. And if Mitch's tenure is what brought what this program needed to light, then I think that that was a successful tenure all along. If Mitch's program brings to light that there needs to be some more money, some more backing, and some key changes from a personnel pool money standpoint for coordinators and so on and so forth, then so be it. Mitch ends up being the casualty for that. I don't want to say it's a martyrdom, but perhaps it brings to light that football has some work to do if it's going to be competitive with the rest of the league.
And that's where it'll have to start. It'll have to. I don't know where money comes from. I have no idea where that'll come from. But in order to compete for OVC championship, you got to spend at least what most of the top teams in the league are competing at. If you're near the bottom in spending, you'll be near the bottom in the standings almost every year. Football is one of those. It's not like basketball where you can occasionally, I guess, you could luck up and just get a really good player better than expected, and suddenly you're better than expected. But that in football, one guy, you get the best quarterback ever. If you don't have an offensive line that can protect him, he's no good.
Yeah.
Same thing for a running back. Man, he's a great running back. Well, we can't block for him, so it doesn't really matter how good he is. Yeah, it takes a lot of pieces, not as many for basketball. So hopefully they'll get that part of it solved. Don't know the answer to that, but I know they're working on making that happen. Certainly wish Mitch the best. Again, his staff tremendous to work with, but also looking forward to the future. Got a lot of key pieces on the team. While we're talking football, let's talk some high school football. This is not a repeat of last year's show, but it could be, or the year before. It's Mayfield playing for a state championship in the 2A championship.
Spoiler.
Against Somerset. I mean, they're usually playing for it every year. But you said they took that loss early on, and I still remember this because I went, really? They lost to McCracken County. Like, they'll still play for a state championship, and I'll be son of a gun. You talked about getting one wrong earlier. You got that one right, Ed.
Yeah, and here's the deal. The reason that happens is for whatever there is something in the Mayfield water, because when they lose, something switches. They just switch. They're like, oh, well, what we're doing wasn't enough. We'll find another level. And some teams, that's their only level. Like, after they've lost, they're like, man, that is all we had. Mayfield, there's always another tier of football that those kids can play. And there's always another tier that the coaching staff can coach. Joe Morris didn't win 250 games on accident. Mayfield football hasn't won 900 program wins just by sheer luck. I mean, there's been a lot of talent come through that program over the last, you know, century of high school football. You know, when you average 9-3 as your record on an annual basis for 100 years, Neil, 100 years.
Yeah, I know.
100 years of high school football, and they have 900 wins. They're one of five programs in the nation with 900 wins. That is silly. And right now they can add to it because this team is that good. The last time they won a state title, they lost to McCracken County because it just brought about this sense of urgency. Like, this is it, guys. Like, oh, well, if we play like that again, we're out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now, Somerset is a fabulous, fabulous football team. They've got a dual-threat quarterback that's really good. I suggest picking up the Paducah Sun today. Al Willman has a nice preview from Mayfield's perspective, and then a Q&A from Somerset's perspective from Jared Peck of the Lexington Herald Leader. They're a high school sports beat writer. So, you know, the Briar Jumpers, Somerset Briar Jumpers, by the way, that's awesome. I love.
Pete Lancaster's high school. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
There you go.
I forgot something today. I forgot Pete was.
Yeah, he's a Briar Jumper.
He's a Briar Jumper. I love it. I love that. I mean, how many Briar Jumpers do you hear of?
That's all. I don't know of any others.
I don't know of any others either. That's an excellent, and I'm sure, is the mascot a bunny rabbit?
It is. Yeah, I guess that's the thing that jumps over the Briars, I guess.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it's a briar patch, and please don't throw me in that briar patch.
You can always win by a hair. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that Al can do with that.
That's good. I fully expect it to be a terrific football game. I do think Mayfield wins. I think it'll be high scoring. It's two prolific offenses, two quarterbacks, Jaden Stinson. Cannot remember the name of the Somerset quarterback, but I do know he's a dual threat guy. He's another dude that can – he's thrown for 3,000 yards, rushed for another 800. Jaden Stinson's thrown for 48 touchdowns, also is holding a Murray State offer right now. I know Mitch Stewart was the one to offer him, but I'm sure the next coach that comes in line will probably want to take a look at that. But back to Mayfield, I mean, you're exactly right. It's one of those situations where they're playing for a national. They're playing for a state championship again. And it just doesn't come to any surprise to me. It never has, and it never will. Next year, people keep talking about, oh, they graduate this great senior class. Till I see it happen, until I see down years, what is a down year for them, 9-3?
I'm just going to save this segment, and we won't even cut it next year. We'll just drop this in, take the Jaden Stinson name out, all that.
Yeah,
just
and we'll
use the same thing.
Just use the same thing. Put a new quarterback in. They still have Kylan Galbraith at running back, who rushed for 1,518 touchdowns this year. Cade Neely's going to Louisville.
May not
Alonzo
be Somerset,
Daniel,
but somebody.
Somebody.
Yeah.
They're always fighting for the last game. And they're always practicing on Thanksgiving. That's two things. It's Mayfield football. Death, taxes, practice on Thanksgiving. It's because they're playing for a semifinal or a state championship. Year in and year out, I don't see that changing under Joe Morris ever.
Heard one of the interviews that Blake Bernier did with us, with Chris Champion, and I think it was their last game of the season. It was cold. It was in like 38 or something. You know, he's a Mayfield guy, and he told him, you need to crave this. You need to get to where this is what you want to play. When you're playing cold December football, you're playing winning football.
Yes.
When your season's over and it's in the 50s, and that's your last game, you're done. But when you're playing in December and it's in the 40s or the 30s, that's what you want to crave, and that's kind of what we'll have. You know, I don't think tomorrow's going to be too awful bad from that point, but that ought to be a lot of fun. I was actually nervous. John Moran, I noticed he had a back injury, hasn't been playing. I'm going to see him a week from Saturday in Memphis. Was wondering if he would be back, and got the word that he is expected to return tomorrow. I'm not sure his minutes, who knows, may be limited. Not really sure. They haven't really said that part of it. But it's good to see Ja is back from the back injury.
Yeah, and so they said week to week. I think a lot of it had to, it's big time news all over social media at the moment. The thing about it is for him, well, first of all, unbelievable what he did in October and November. Enough for Rookie of the Month.
Yeah.
By the way, first month in the NBA, he's Rookie of the Month. Oh, what do you know? You and I saw this for 2 years. Everybody else is getting surprised by it now. It's like, oh, man, this kid can really play. Yeah, we knew. We've known for 48 months now that he's been.
Yeah, I've seen it. They're always, Pan, you see, he went behind his back and then whips it into the corner. It's like, yeah, I know. That's what he does. He does that.
These are signature moves.
And the thing is, he's got NBA guys. They can't stop him either. I've seen multiple times where he puts the move on a guy and they're looking like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
What just happened?
What just happened?
No one can do that. He's a rookie. He can't do that, but he's still doing it. And he's still learning. He's still learning, Ed. He's a blast to watch. I don't know how many people I've run into that's already been to Memphis to watch him play.
Yeah.
And more are coming. I mean, they got an instant fan base when they selected Ja Morant. Not intentionally. I mean, that wasn't their thinking. Well, if we get this kid, we'll get a bunch of fans in. It just so happened to be a windfall that they're getting by getting Morant.
Well, and here's the other day. Here's the other thing about it too. Ja is just one of those guys that is willing to do anything to win a basketball game or to keep his team in a fighting position. If he can't score very well, cool. He's going to pass the ball. If they're trying to block him up in the line, in the perimeter or whatever, he's going to drive to the basket and try and score and get free throws. And you take a look at his statistically what he's been able to do. He's getting, you know, almost two steals a game right now. He's jumping passing lanes. He's aggressive. The injury that happened to him, he actually came back and played that game and the two games after that. Played fairly well. He ended up having – it was in Indiana 2 weeks ago. It was right before Thanksgiving, November 25th. He hit a cameraman. He went for a dunk. It got blocked by Miles Turner. And as he fell baseline, between his shoulders, he hit a cameraman's knee.
Okay.
Knocked the wind out of him. He kind of had to be helped off the court because it was a full brunt play.
Yeah.
Slam, block, so on and so forth. Rolls to the floor, knee to the back.
Right.
Wouldn't feel good for anybody. Didn't look like anything was broken. He comes back in the second half, still finishes with 19 points, 10 assists, no turnovers. Beautiful double-double. They don't win, but a great game from him nonetheless. He plays the next game, does well. Plays the next game, does all right. And then after that game, he basically had to tell somebody, like, man, bro, like, my chest, my back, like, there's some spasming. I'm not feeling great. So that's what made them choose to go week to week. Memphis isn't in a position to where it's going to go win and make the playoffs this year. That's not an attack on Ja or even this team.
No.
They're the youngest.
Everyone knew that.
Yeah, they're the youngest team in the league. They really don't have a ton of veteran presence in that locker room. They don't really have some of the key pieces that they need on the bench to sustain long runs. That being said, they've got to take care of their asset, too. I mean, this is a business now. Ja is a business piece for the Memphis Grizzlies. So he, Brandon Clark, they've both been on week-to-week stretch right now for the last 10 days because they don't really know, well, how quickly are you going to recover? You know, we need to figure out if your body's ready to go. So it's good news that Ja's able to kind of bounce back after, what, about a 4 or 5-game hiatus to get back in. Look, Luka Doncic, I looked at this yesterday, actually. Luka Doncic won Rookie of the Year for the 2018-19 season. He played 72 of 82 games. It's very rare. Trae Young, who nearly won Rookie of the Year for the Atlanta Hawks, played 81 of 82. I mean, so it's very rare. I think if you go back and you look over the last 10 years, it's just extremely unorthodox for a rookie to come in and play all 82 games. It's happened. I'm not saying it's not impossible. I'm just saying it's not common for a rookie to come in and play every minute of every game. This isn't college anymore, you know, and play all 82 games. They've got to work into that system. And load management over the last 5 to 10 years in the NBA has really changed a lot. I know a lot of people don't necessarily like it, but, you know, we're looking for, as I said to you many times, perpetuity with Ja Morant's career. You want him playing his best basketball later in his career as he continues to develop and get better at the game of how fast the NBA can be. As Ja gets better and stronger, he's not always going to be 175 pounds, you know. Russell Westbrook put on weight to get stronger and more physical. Look what he's become, you know. So James Harden did the same thing. He was a squirrely dude playing for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now he's one of the most elite scorers in the world, and he's put on a little bit of weight so that you can absorb that contact. Matter of fact, Neil, when you go to see him next week, you'll notice underneath Ja's jersey, he's got kind of almost like a – and I know he had some of this at Murray State, but it's a really unique – if you look at it, it almost looks like kind of a life preserver. Mm-hmm. He's got like a rib armor that keeps him from getting just absolutely battered in the paint. Mm-hmm. And he'll get stronger with time. But, no, it's good to see that he's back, and hopefully you get a good chance to see him play next week.
All right, Ed, here's a couple of batteries for your remote so you can go back to watching Disney Plus. And I appreciate the visit. Hopefully you'll be out of batteries and we can chat again next week.
Yeah, no, I definitely will be.
All right, back on Thursday. See you then.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for the Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for the Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.